Imagine walking into an $83 million state-of-the-art NHL practice facility. You hear the roar of the crowd in the main arena. You see the pristine, freshly resurfaced ice under all those bright lights. And you just assume, I mean, you'd naturally assume that the bank accounts behind the scenes match the sheer scale of the building.
Right, you'd think they're rolling in cash.
Exactly. And then you look at the bond reserve account that's supposed to be keeping a massive chunk of this project afloat, and you see exactly $18.71.
It's a number that completely forces you to do a double take. Like, literally $18.71 left in the tank for a multi-million dollar infrastructure project.
It's wild. So, welcome to the deep dive. Today, our mission for you is to really unpack the complex, highly specific, and frankly, utterly fascinating story behind one particular municipal bond investment.
Yeah, we are looking at the Series 2018B subordinate revenue bonds for the St. Louis Community Ice Center.
Right, which most people locally just call the Centene Community Ice Center out in Maryland Heights, Missouri. We've gathered a whole stack of sources for this: financial disclosures, municipal reports, socioeconomic data, all to solve this central mystery.
And the mystery is basically, how does an $83 million multi-rink facility backed by an NHL team end up essentially running on empty for a specific class of its investors?
Right, and this deep dive really isn't just about an ice rink in Missouri. It's more of a masterclass in reading the fine print of municipal investments,
Oh, absolutely. It's about understanding structural risk. And most importantly, it's about learning to see the massive difference between a successful physical building and a successful financial asset.
Because as the data shows us today, those are two completely different things.
Completely different.
So to understand the financial reality, I think we have to start with the physical dream, right? The original vision for this place. Because the scale is just
It
huge.
really is.
This isn't just your neighborhood skating rink where kids go for birthday parties. The Centene Community Ice Center is this 275,000 square foot behemoth. It is a true public-private endeavor co-owned by the City of Maryland Heights and St. Louis County.
Right, and the physical specifications alone require just massive capital. I mean, we are talking about four NHL-sized ice sheets.
Four of them.
Yeah, four. You have a main indoor arena with 2,500 seats. You have two dedicated indoor practice rinks. And then there's this really unique feature, which is a covered outdoor rink called the Barn.
Oh, I saw that in the sources.
Yeah, and it's engineered to actually convert into a 4,500 capacity concert venue operated by Live Nation, which they call the St. Louis Music Park.
Plus, it has the ultimate prestige factor, right? It's the official practice facility for the NHL's St. Louis Blues. And it's the home ice for Lindenwood University's men's and women's ice hockey teams. It was designed to be a crown jewel of local infrastructure. Okay, let's unpack this a bit. When I look at the sheer scale of it, investing in this project sounds a lot like buying a hypercar for your daily commute.
That's a great way to put it.
Like, it looks absolutely incredible parked in the driveway. It turns heads. Everyone wants to take a picture with it. But the daily operating and maintenance costs of just taking it to the grocery store will absolutely bury you.
Yeah, what's fascinating here is that the initial goals set out by the developers were just incredibly ambitious. They were projecting over 1 million visitors annually.
Wow, 1 million.
Right, and targeting a $20 million economic impact for the surrounding region. But running a multi-sheet ice facility is inherently, unavoidably expensive on just a sheer utility level.
Oh, I can't even imagine the electric bill.
Well, think about the mechanics of freezing four NHL-sized sheets of ice year-round in the Midwest. The water usage is astronomical. The industrial electricity required for the ammonia refrigeration plants is just constant.
Right, because you're running massive freezers while simultaneously heating the spectator areas so people don't literally freeze in the stands.
Precisely. You have the specialized maintenance, the Zambonis, the HVAC systems. So the initial profitability projections for a facility with this kind of permanent fixed overhead, they may have simply been unrealistic from day one.
Regardless of how many people actually walk through the doors to buy a pretzel or ticket.
Exactly. The baseline costs are just that high.
Which means having a great busy building is one thing. But how the debt for that building is structured, well, that's where the trapdoor is, isn't it?
Oh, definitely.
Let's talk about the financing, specifically the $55.5 million bond package that actually got this thing built. Because this naturally leads to exactly why some of the investors are currently just holding the bag.
So this is where we get into the anatomy of the deal. and where an investor has to pay really close attention to the hierarchy of money. The financing was split into two distinct tiers.
Okay, walk us through that.
You have $50.15 million in senior series 2018A bonds. And then sitting beneath those, you have $5.4 million in series 2018B bonds.
Right.
Those B bonds are the subordinate junior debt.
Well, wait, if I'm an investor, why would I ever buy a series B bond if I know I'm sitting underneath $50 million of senior debt? Like, what is the incentive to take that subordinate position?
Yield. It always comes down to yield. Subordinate debt carries significantly higher risk, so to attract capital, the issuer has to offer a higher interest rate.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Right. So investors looking for a larger return on their capital will buy into the B tier, essentially betting that the facility will generate more than enough revenue to cover the senior debt, leaving plenty left over to pay their higher yielding interest.
Except in this case, that bet went totally sideways. The current reality for those Series B bonds is incredibly grim. I mean, the project is in active default on them.
Yeah, they've missed multiple interest payments. September 2023, March 2024, September 2025.
And their reserve account is functionally exhausted down to under 20 bucks. Our sources show the debt service coverage ratio, which is a key metric here, is sitting at a dismal 76.71%.
Let's actually translate that coverage ratio into practical terms for you, the listener. A 76% coverage ratio basically means that for every dollar this facility owes to the bank across all its debt, it is only bringing in about 76 cents of net revenue.
Ouch.
Yeah, it is fundamentally operating at a deficit.
But here's where it gets really interesting and why that two-tier structure matters so much. If you're a Series B bondholder, you are essentially standing in a buffet line, but you only get to eat after an entire football team, the Series A bondholders, has gone through and loaded up their plates.
That's a very accurate analogy.
Right. What happens when the facility is only generating 76 cents on the dollar? There's literally no food left when you finally get to the front of the line.
And that is the brutal mathematical reality of subordination in municipal bonds. The pain of that 76% shortfall is not shared equally among all investors.
It's all in the bottom tier.
Exactly. The Senior Series A bondholders have a legally binding first claim on every single penny of net revenue. So they take their full dollar, they are made whole, and the Series B investors are left absorbing 100% of the project's financial shortfall.
There is simply no cash flowing down to their tier.
None at all.
Okay, but let's look at the operations. I mean, the rinks are busy. Lindenwood is playing there. Live Nation is throwing concerts in the outdoor amphitheater. Why is there such a massive financial shortfall in the first place?
Well, obviously, the pandemic closures in 2020 put a massive dent in the initial ramp up.
Sure, but our sources point to something much more localized and, frankly, much more shocking than that. It wasn't just macroeconomic bad luck.
No, not at all. We are looking at a series of just unprecedented breakdowns in municipal oversight.
Right. Let's look at the Community Improvement District, or CID, sales tax. Now, for the listener, a CID tax is basically an extra hyperlocal tax. It's an extra cent or so on the dollar charged, specifically within the boundaries of the facility.
Right, on things like tickets, concessions, that sort of thing.
Exactly. And it's designed to directly fund the debt. This facility was supposed to collect that special sales tax from day one. But they didn't.
They just didn't do it.
For 4 years, they just failed to collect it. You can model out interest rates and ticket sales, but how on earth does an investor account for human error of this magnitude? How do you price in someone just forgetting to collect taxes for 4 years?
It is a staggering oversight. Our sources state this was allegedly due to misinformation provided by a city employee. And that one operational error resulted in a $1.5 million revenue loss.
$1.5 million. Just gone.
It's just gone. And if we connect this to the bigger picture of municipal finance, this is exactly why reading the security provisions of a bond is so critical. These specific bonds are what the industry calls special limited obligations.
Meaning they aren't backed by the general taxpayers of the city, right?
Correct. They are payable solely from specific restricted sources, namely the net revenues of the ICE facility itself and that specific CID sales tax.
So there is no broad city tax base acting as a safety net.
Right. So when that hyperlocal revenue stream is compromised by a failure to simply collect the tax, the bondholders are entirely exposed. They have absolutely zero safety net.
And it gets even deeper. I was looking at the management contracts and the sources. They were structured so that the day-to-day operations manager, Oak View Group, and the concert booker, Live Nation, got paid their fees before the bondholders saw a dime.
Yeah, that's a crucial detail.
Like, how does an investor even price that in? You can model ticket sales, sure, but how do you model the fact that the venue operators get to empty the cash register before the debt is paid?
I mean, it sounds completely backwards to an investor, but here is the underlying mechanism you have to understand. If the facility doesn't pay the day-to-day operator to turn on the lights or the concert booker to bring in the talent, the doors close tomorrow.
The revenue drops to actual zero.
Exactly. Bondholders are essentially forced to accept this payment hierarchy because a closed, empty building pays no one. The operators have all the leverage here.
Hold on, though. Let's zoom out to the city of Maryland Heights for a second. This is a co-owned city project. It literally has the city's name attached to it. And I'm looking at the city of Maryland Heights financial books here, and they are swimming in cash.
Oh, they have a very strong general fund.
Very strong. For fiscal year 2023, they had a general fund with unrestricted net assets of over $33 million. That is a fund balance that is 122% of their annual expenditures.
And they pull in almost $9 million a year just from gaming taxes at the local casino.
Right. So what does this all mean? The city clearly has the money. And they even stepped in to take over direct management of this facility in mid-2024. So if this is their crown jewel project, why wouldn't they just write a check to cover the subordinate bonds and save their own reputation? Why let this Series B bonds default? Isn't that a terrible look for the city?
This raises a really important question, and it highlights the critical difference between a legal obligation and political will. The city is engaging in a very calculated exercise in municipal boundary setting.
Because they have spent some money on it, to be fair. By April 2024, the city had provided at least five subsidies totaling over $2 million just to prevent the facility from going into foreclosure.
Right.
And they agreed to replenish the Senior Series A reserve account up to $625,000 a year if it gets drawn down.
But notice where they drew the line. They are protecting their physical asset from foreclosure because they want to keep the building. They are backing the senior debt to save face in the broader municipal bond market, signaling that they are a reliable partner for top-tier investments.
But they explicitly declined to extend that same support to the Series B bonds.
Right. Legally, they have no requirement to pay those Series B bonds. And politically, I mean, think about the optics. It is very hard for a city administrator to justify taking local taxpayer money, even if they have a massive surplus, to bail out institutional investors who knowingly chased high yields by buying subordinated junior tier debt.
Wow. So they just cut the junior investors loose, they keep the shiny arena, they keep the senior bondholders quiet, and they let the folks at the back of the buffet line starve because they technically never promised them a meal.
It is a ruthless but entirely legal financial boundary.
And, you know, maybe the city is holding on to its cash so tightly because they're looking out the window of that ice rink and getting spooked. They see what's happening to the surrounding zip code.
Oh, the macro headwinds are very real.
Yeah, because when you buy a municipal bond for an ice rink, you aren't just betting on hockey. You are betting on the microeconomy of the zip code it sits in. And right now, that zip code is flashing warning signs.
The demographic and economic data provides critical context for why the city might be behaving so defensively. Maryland Heights is dealing with a shrinking population. Projections show an annual decline rate of -0.53% from 2020 through 2026.
And the housing market is taking a massive hit. As of February 2026, median home prices in Maryland Heights plummeted 20.7% year over year.
Which is a staggering drop in local property wealth.
St. Louis County as a whole also saw negative economic growth, a -0.4% compound annual growth rate from 2017 to 2022.
We also have to factor in community safety and environmental stability. Maryland Heights has a surprisingly high crime rate, about 15 crimes per 1,000 residents. That ranks it in the fourth percentile for safety nationwide.
Wow. And the economic cost of that crime is estimated $846 per resident yearly.
Right. Add in environmental vulnerabilities like high flood risk and operational scares like a reported gas leak incident at the ICE Center itself in October 2025. And you have a highly volatile environment.
Yeah. I know they later clarified the gas leak was just a malfunctioning alarm. But I mean, when you're using industrial ammonia to freeze four sheets of ice, an alarm going off is enough to make any patron or investor super nervous.
Absolutely.
But I want to connect this macro data directly to the rink's survival. Why does a 20% drop in median home prices matter to an NHL practice facility?
Because a facility like the Centene Community Ice Center relies entirely on discretionary spending. St. Louis County, as a broader region, does have some strengths, like a high per capita personal income of over $93,000.
Right.
But the highly localized issues in Maryland Heights are toxic for a facility with massive fixed utility costs. If people feel unsafe due to crime, or if their home equity is evaporating by 20% a year, they are instantly much less likely to spend their discretionary income on concert tickets, expensive youth hockey league registrations, or high-priced concessions.
That makes total sense.
The facility requires a thriving, wealthy local base feeling confident enough to spend money, and the data suggests that specific local base is currently eroding.
So we have an eroding local economy, a history of just unprecedented operational oversights, a city that has firmly shut its wallet to junior investors, and reserves down to the change you'd literally find in your couch cushions.
It paints a tough picture.
It really does. Are there any silver linings in our sources for this investment? With the city turning its back, the economy stalling, and the reserves empty, is there any hope left for these bonds?
There are a few operational bright spots. The biggest strength is the anchor tenant. Mm. The St. Louis Blues are locked into a 30-year lease.
Yeah, 30 years.
Yeah, that provides an incredibly stable foundation of usage and prestige that you simply cannot manufacture.
Right. And the building is attracting major events. In 2026, they are hosting the ACHA National Championships and the USA Hockey Girls Tier 2 National Championships.
Plus, we mentioned the city took over direct oversight of the operations from the Legacy Foundation in mid-2024 to try and fix the mess.
Yeah, and our sources note that by March 2025, there are finally reports showing signs of improving cash flow and the approval of a new, hopefully more favorable, management deal.
The physical asset remains highly relevant. It is functioning. It is serving the community. And under direct city management, the bleeding may finally be slowing down.
Okay, so let me ask you the ultimate investment question then. For the listener trying to evaluate this, is this actually a distressed asset opportunity where the bad news is fully priced in and things can only go up from here? Or is this just a falling knife, meaning if you try to catch it, you're just going to get sliced open?
Based on the structural reality of the debt, our risk assessment confirms it is still very much a falling knife. The overall investment sentiment is decidedly negative.
And that all comes back to the subordination.
Right, entirely. The structural flaw of subordination means that even if cash flow improves slightly under the new city management, even if they host a dozen national championships and completely optimize the concessions, that new revenue will almost certainly be swallowed whole by the senior debt.
Because of that 76% coverage ratio.
Exactly. They have a massive deep hole to dig out of just to satisfy the legal claims of the Series A bondholders. The fundamental math simply does not support a financial recovery for the junior tier anytime soon. The 2018B bonds remain a highly speculative defaulting asset.
So to summarize the core takeaway for you today, a successful physical building does not guarantee a successful financial asset.
Yeah.
You can have NHL stars skating on the ice, sold out concerts in the outdoor venue, and a facility that looks like $1 billion. Wait, I mean, it looks incredible.
Wait, it looks great on a postcard.
Exactly. While the investors who bought the subordinate debt to build it are left staring at a bank account with exactly $18.71 inside.
It's a stark reminder that in municipal finance, you are investing in the legal structure of the cash flow, the specific security provisions, and the competence of the local oversight. You are not just investing in the concrete, the steel, and the ice.
Which leaves us with a final lingering question to ponder as we wrap up on your own. If cities can use complex bond structures like subordination to let junior investors take the fall for massive municipal mistakes like forgetting to collect a specific tax for 4 years, while the city ultimately swoops in, bails out the senior debt to save its own credit rating, and keeps the shiny physical arena for themselves, will investors ever trust public-private partnerships for local sports facilities again?
That really is the multi-million-dollar question hanging over the municipal market right now.
Yeah, and how will community infrastructure even be funded if the subordinate bond market realizes the game is essentially rigged against them when things go wrong? It's something to think about. Until they answer it, you might want to look past the championship banners and check the fine print of the revenue streams. Because sometimes an $83 million fortress is just a very expensive buffet with absolutely no food left. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll catch you next time.